First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
A Republican sweep in Jacksonville and across Florida. Good Wednesday morning. We're live from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we've got full results from last night's midterm elections, plus the latest on the path of Tropical Storm Nicole. You can join us. The number to join the show right now is 549-2937. Then later, it's Wednesday, and that means we've got a little good news to brighten up your midweek, plus the establishment of a new fund to fight hate speech and anti-Semitism on the First Coast. It's all ahead this morning. But let's talk Florida first. A.G. Gankarski of Jax Today and Florida Politics joins us now with a recap of last night's historic midterm elections. A.G., good morning. Thanks for getting up early with us after a late night.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me on.
And folks, we want to hear from you. What are your reactions to the midterm election results? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Well, AG, no big surprises last night. But let's talk first about the governor's race and the margin of victory for Ron DeSantis as he sweeps to a second term. This seems to tee him up pretty well for what is widely assumed to be a presidential bid. And it is not good news for former president and another Florida man, Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Ron DeSantis, we have to talk about this. He had a historic victory last night. The benchmark was Jeb Bush's win in 2002 over Bill McBride. DeSantis exceeded that. Not only did he exceed that, he took the down-ballot people with him. He took the attorney general, the CFO, the agriculture commissioner candidate. We saw it a down-ballot here in Jacksonville in the sheriff's race. But it was a dynamic victory for DeSantis. It was a vindication of his political approach, which is right of center, oppositional to Joe Biden. And it definitely puts Donald Trump on the defensive because Donald Trump's been running that soft campaign since he lost 2 years ago. But it feels like Republicans, specifically younger Republicans, specifically those tired of the Trump antics and tantrums, are looking for something like what Ron DeSantis offers. So this is going to heat up very quickly in the coming months as Republicans try to figure out how to get the White House back in 2024.
Certainly, we'll be watching that. Will the National Republican Party really push a candidate like Ron DeSantis or perhaps Glenn Youngkin, the governor of Virginia, or someone like that? Marco Rubio coasting to re-election last night over Val Demings, who, by the way, really outraised Rubio. But I think that the results show that Florida is definitively a red state, and the Democratic Party in Florida did not have momentum and did not have the organization that they needed to do well in this cycle.
Right. The chair, Manny Diaz, he talked about how outside money didn't come in 2022 the way it did in 2018, which is a lot closer election. You also had issues with Chris and Demings. They had really one-note kind of messages. Chris and Demings both focused heavily on the Dobbs decision, the abortion decision, and talking about DeSantis being extremist on the abortion issue. I don't think that really played here because they had very little else to go along with it. The Demings message, it didn't really develop in the 18 months she was in the campaign. She was introducing herself as the child of a maid and a janitor 18 months ago. And in her final argument, she was making the same statement. Charlie Crist, he ran as sort of an inevitability candidate. Democrats didn't give Nikki Fried much of a chance against him in the primary. A lot of endorsements went Crist's way. And Crist ran a complacent campaign, like he didn't have a strategy to win beyond getting the nomination. Happy to lose kind of Democrats, that is the epitaph of this. Both Demings and Crist did not do what they needed to do to win, in the way that DeSantis did, in the way that Rubio did. And without the outside help that somebody like Andrew Gillum had 4 years ago, it was really hard to keep these races close. Mm-hmm. Marco Rubio and Ron DeSantis also drew from Miami-Dade going red. That didn't happen 4 years ago. And that was really a Donald Trump legacy, because the Donald Trump 2020 campaign, they put Miami-Dade Hispanics into play. In 2022, Republicans went into overdrive, and they took the county just like they took Duval, just like they took Hillsborough. So this was a generational election for Republicans, especially considering what happened on the legislative level, where you've got supermajorities in both the House and the Senate now. Long story short, Republicans can do whatever they want for the next 2 years, probably for a lot longer than that.
That is certainly the story in Florida. I think the Dobbs decision really motivated women voters, though, in other parts of the country. We also saw strong youth turnout around the country and independent voters breaking narrowly for Democratic candidates, rejecting election deniers in other states, not in Florida so much. Now, let's talk about Jacksonville. The big sheriff's race was watched closely, AG, and T.K. Waters, the Republican, easily beating his opponent, Democrat Lakeisha Burton.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see how it went, because Waters, he had 47% in the first election. He got 55%, so he gained 8 points out of the Democratic candidates who weren't in the field. Burton obviously went from 33% to 45%. So 3/5 of the Democratic voters in August went Burton's way. That was not enough, especially with weak Democratic turnout, especially with really motivated Republican turnout. T.K. Waters didn't do a lot to win. It seemed like Burton was doing a lot more of the messaging. Burton was calling into shows like this one, making her case, but it wasn't enough. And so you've got Waters well-positioned for the general election in 2023, obviously. He had the Ron DeSantis endorsement, and it's kind of a rising tide lifts all boats that helped T.K. Waters, even though many would say he didn't run a particularly inspired campaign. It didn't matter. He got 55%. That's better than what Mike Williams got in 2015 against Ken Jefferson. So he can take that as a mandate also.
By the way, in Atlantic Beach, only eight votes separate the two candidates, the two leading candidates. Curtis Ford up over Brittany Norris by 8 votes for the mayor of Atlantic Beach, folks. That may trigger a recount. We'll watch that. Let's go to your calls. 549-2937. Kendra in Mandarin, go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
So I'd like to say that as a career public school teacher, I could not be more disappointed in Ron DeSantis' victory. He's shown himself to be anti-literacy, anti-public health. And I know last weekend during that horrendous anti-Semitic messaging during the Florida-Georgia game, a major event that he was present at, greeting the fans from the field, he did not condemn the anti-Semitism until Monday, even though Mayor Lenny Curry and others condemned it immediately. Moving on to Clay Yarborough, who won as well. Clay Yarborough, about 10, 12 years ago, said that Muslims and gay people do not have a place as government leaders. So I am so, so disappointed that Florida has elected these bigoted and non-literacy promoting leaders. Thank you.
All right, Kendra, thanks for your thoughts. Ed in Nocatee. Hello, Ed. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, kudos to Florida for running the best elections in the country, it looks like. After a hurricane, after we're the third largest state in the country, a lot of people to count, a recent hurricane, and one coming also, one out of five people over 65, a very large Hispanic and immigrant community, which for them, English is the second language. You would think that might be a problem with running elections. And still, we were able to have a smooth, early counted election. We should teach everybody else how to do it right.
Mm.
That was it.
Thank you, Ed. Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Thank you, Ed. AG, you know, as you mentioned and as that caller mentioned, Hispanic voters in Florida are moving right. So for the national Dems, that voting bloc has traditionally been thought of as a Democratic constituency, not necessarily.
Yeah, and you've got to look at Hispanic communities. It's a lot more diverse than what some people think, because each community has its own preconceptions. People from Venezuela, people from Cuba, they're going to be motivated by different things than people from, you know, say, Puerto Rico or someplace like that, or Mexico. And that's something that the segmented marketing and a segmented approach, I think, has really benefited Republicans. And Democrats have been caught flat-footed by that and so many other things in terms of messaging to more niche constituencies. Democrats, they kept their message very general. They, you know, talked about abortion. They talked about affordability. They talked about cultural signifiers. It seemed to be a lot of appeal to the white liberal votes. I don't know if they made the appeal to minority groups that are part of winning coalitions for Democrats. When Democrats win, they do so with minority votes coming out overwhelmingly. I wanted to speak to the first caller's concerns also. You know, Ron DeSantis, he ran against the candidate, Charlie Crist, who had a teachers union head as his lieutenant governor candidate. You got to consider that. So that issue could have been front and center, except for the fact that Carla Hernandez was not a very good candidate. She hadn't run for office before. It showed. She gave a lot of quotes that were too live when, you know, anybody paid attention to her at all. So the lack of an integrated ticket between Crist and Hernandez, that was also an issue. So the schooling message did not come into play the way that public school advocates would have hoped. I also wanted to speak about Clay Yarborough a bit. I mean, Clay Yarborough, obviously, 10 years ago when he was on the city council, he was one of the most social conservative members. But in 2022, when he was running in the primary for the Senate seat, he was probably the most moderate of the three candidates compared to Jason Fisher and Cord Byrd, who is now Secretary of State.
Shows you that on the right, that party is moving farther to the right on a number of issues.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you have to look at it in that context. I mean, the Clay Yarborough of 2022 is not the Clay Yarborough of 2011. Politicians do evolve. I don't think Clay Yarborough stands by those statements as made when he was on the city council. It's definitely not something he's embracing in his current public persona.
Thanks for that. And now one of the callers mentioned concerns about anti-Semitic hate speech. We will be talking about a new fund set up to combat hate messages and hate speech later in the hour. But first, let's take one more call on the elections. It's David at the Beaches. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. How you doing?
All right. Thanks for calling.
Good. Hey, I'd like to congratulate Ron DeSantis. I didn't vote for him, but I'd like to congratulate him. Same with T.K. Waters. I didn't vote for him. I'm a registered independent. I typically lean to the blue. But I think the biggest message that's coming out of these 2022 elections is the one that really needs to get played over and over. It was a fair election. It was an election. There is, you know, there's no games going on. You accept your defeat and we move on. I think what you've been talking about for the last, you know, 20 minutes, Melissa, is American politics. We're not having big discussions of whether or not the system was rigged or whether it's fair. That's a real problem in our politics. We all have to accept the defeat when it's a defeat and congratulate the victors.
Absolutely. Yeah, and thank you for that, David. Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you. Okay. Absolutely right. Bye-bye. And you know, A.G. Gankarski, let's close with that thought, because going outside of Florida, independent voters across the country rejected election deniers. Candidates running for governor in a number of states who refused to accept the 2020 results as legitimate did not win. And other candidates that fell into that camp, many of them went down to defeat. So we saw at the polls around the country a rejection of lies about the 2020 election. And we saw losing candidates accept the results, which is our tradition. And that is how it should be.
Yeah, I think people are really tired of hearing candidates, Democrat or Republican, complain about rigged elections, complain about how they're not accepting the results of an election. That's been litigated to death over the years. I do want to say Florida elections were secure before this particular election cycle. The 2020 election, there weren't anomalies there. So Ron DeSantis has messaged around election reform, and he's done some things, but, you know, he inherited a template that served him. And, you know, the caller seemed to elide some of the institutional advantages that DeSantis had. I mean, we've got super majorities now in the Florida Senate and the Florida House because of creative redistricting that some would call gerrymandering, packing Democrats into set districts so where they can run up the margins. We saw it here and we saw it elsewhere. And at the correct congressional level, 3/4 of the congressional delegation in a state that is basically 50-50 is going to be Republican. That is creative map making. We're not going to have a Democrat north of I-4 in Congress. So a lot of the institutional play came in here helping the Republican position. And I used the phrase before, but it's a rising tide lifts all boats. And, you know, we've seen these reforms. We've seen DeSantis' campaign. We've seen his persona. All of these things came into play. They created a historic Republican win. I don't know how much post-election consensus with Democrats DeSantis wants to pick. He's billing this as a historic win, and people who think they have historic mandates usually exercise and exploit them to the degree that they can.
A.G. Gankarski of RJAX Today, thank you, as always, for joining us after a late night. We appreciate you being here.
Thanks a lot, Melissa. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, folks, another big story we're following this morning is, of course, Tropical Storm Nicole, soon to be likely Hurricane Nicole. Megan Borowski is a meteorologist with the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network and Florida Storms. She is tracking Nicole for us. Hi, Megan.
Good morning, Melissa.
Hey, so we're watching this closely here in North Florida. Tell us what we can expect out of Nicole over the next few days.
Well, you know, we're already experiencing very strong winds, beach erosion, and rough surf. So that is already impacting our area. That's going to continue and really only get worse as the day continues and we get into Thursday. And then on top of that, we'll start to see those rain bands start to wrap into our area, especially tonight and all day tomorrow. On and off downpours are expected. Right now, Nicole, as of the latest update from the National Hurricane Center, it's a strong tropical storm. Winds up to 70 miles an hour. It's under 250 miles east of West Palm Beach, expected to approach the South Florida coast throughout the day today, make landfall overnight tonight, anywhere between Vero Beach and Boca Raton. But for our area, we'll remain away from the center of the storm, but this does not mean we're not going to experience a substantial impact in the form of several inches of rain and then that storm surge inundation, 3 to 5 feet right along the intercoastal, and also 2 to 4 foot inundations up the St. John's River. So multitude of hazards coming from Nicole really through late Thursday or early Friday.
Through late Thursday, early Friday, do we expect it to intensify into a Category 1 hurricane still?
That is the forecast right now, and we'll actually get another update here from the National Hurricane Center over the next 36 minutes or so. The next update comes out at 10. And, you know, it's right on the edge of being a hurricane. So that's the forecast right now. Whether or not it's a hurricane at landfall remains to be seen, but the forecast is it should strengthen into a hurricane, at least for a brief amount of time.
And, you know, what does this say about hurricane season in Florida? We're having a pretty active one. There are disaster recovery centers that have closed for this storm, but have recently opened up in our area just to help people still reeling from the aftermath of Hurricane Ian.
Right. I mean, I think the main takeaway, especially from this season in particular, is, you know, we can look at averages and, you know, we see that campfire graphic come out every year of the peak of season is in September, but that graphic is on average, all the hurricane seasons combined, and we look at the averages from all the past seasons. However, each season is different. And this year we are seeing a backloaded season. So yeah, it's November. We're coming out of the elections. We're approaching Thanksgiving, but you know, we still have these tropical cyclones to deal with. The ingredients are still in play. And so we have these storms spinning up. So don't take the averages, take it one season at a time.
Yeah. But is it fair to say, Megan, that this is a new normal to have these storms so late in the season? I don't recall it being that way before, but you follow the numbers more closely than I do.
Mm-hmm. It has happened in the past. Of course, it's not frequent. The most frequent storms that we'll see will be anywhere between the end of July, August, into the middle of September, and then into the start of October. So this is an outlier year. You know, before we can make conclusions, we'll have to see if there's trends over the coming years. I know last year at this time, we were pretty much wrapped up with season. So this particular year is an outlier.
Now, you will be monitoring, Nicole, with your colleagues at the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network around the clock. We're so pleased to have access to this network here at 89.9 WJCT News 89.9. And then if we could, let's also plug the free Florida Storms app, Megan. Tell us about how downloading that app can help people stay on top of weather in Florida.
Yeah, so it is a weather app offered free of charge from the folks at Florida Public Media, Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. You can download it for any iOS or Android device. You can find it in the App Store. Just give it a download. You can access your typical radar map, but on that radar map, you can load a multitude of alerts and specifics for your particular area. You can get hourly and week-long forecast for your particular area as well. And then you also have access to our social media feeds, all the articles that we've published, and pertinent evacuation information as well to help you identify if you're in an evacuation zone and what you need to do if evacuation alerts have been issued for your area. So it's a great resource, especially in these times of very unsettled weather.
Yes, indeed. It's free, folks. Download the Florida Storms app. Stay up to date on Nicole and any storm that batters the state. And thank you, Megan Borowski, meteorologist with the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network, your lifeline in the storm. We will always be on the air with their updates, even if all other power goes out. So, Megan, thank you, as always, for being with us.
You got it. Thank you, Melissa, and stay safe.
And much more still ahead. Later in the hour, we'll tell you how the local Jewish Federation is fighting hate speech with a big new donation. But up next.
Birding needed the same thing, that we didn't need to run all over the world spending lots of carbon and many dollars just for a glimpse of a new bird.
Here's an easy way for you to reduce stress. Just check out the birds in your backyard and take your time. We'll speak with the author of Slow Birding next. We'll be right back.
Join me, Dr. Joe Servin, for What's Health Got to Do with It, a weekly program that examines where and how healthcare intersects with your daily life. Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 9 p.m. on WJCT News 89.9.
For the best music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, tune in to 89.9 HD3, the WJCT app, or jacksmusic.org. We've got your music on Anthology on 89.9 HD3.
Welcome back. Well, in the last few years, so many of us have stepped outside and noticed what we never had before, our lovely neighbors in the sky. Yes, birding has exploded as a hobby, but many people can be intimidated with demanding traditional birding guides. Well, here's a solution. The new book, Slow Birding. It's a one-of-a-kind guide to birding locally, and it encourages you to slow down and notice the spectacular birds in your everyday places. For more about slow birding, I spoke with evolutionary biologist and author Joan Strassman. Hi, Joan. Good to be with you. Thanks for joining us.
I'm delighted to be with you.
You know, I have to tell you, I love your book, and I think so many people will be drawn to this. In the pandemic, when people were at home a lot more, including, I include myself in this, I started getting into watching the birds out the window in my backyard. And in your book, Slow Birding, you really give people a guideline for how to do that. You don't have to travel very far to enjoy these beautiful animals. Tell us more about what inspired this book.
I have thought about writing this book for about 30 years, ever since Carlo Petrini started the slow food movement in Italy, where the point was to avoid fast food and to enjoy the local, long-developed foods of Italy. I felt that birding needed the same thing, that we didn't need to run all over the world spending lots of carbon and many dollars just for a glimpse of a new bird, that we could watch our local birds, but that that watching would be enriched if we knew a bit more about them.
So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because I see so many birds in our yard, and I don't know what a lot of them are. Now, in this book, Slow Birding, The Art and Science of Enjoying the Birds in Your Own Backyard, you do help people understand the species in their region of the country. And, you know, we're in the Southeast, so there are a lot of interesting birds in our part of America. What are some birds in the Southeast we should be keeping our eyes out for?
I looked through the birds in the book for how much they overlapped with where you are, and they're all there, except for snow geese are not found there. So it's easy to look at the common birds, at the robins, the cardinals, the blue jays, the house sparrows, the mockingbirds. You have all of those birds. You have all the birds in the book, the great egrets that were nearly driven extinct. Mm-hmm. You also have other birds special to the coast. You have on the coast you would have the osprey and the wonderful brown pelicans, and you have great-tailed grackles. I like them. Some people don't. So there's just lots of birds there.
Incredible biodiversity. What other advice do you have for people that want to get into what you call slow birding? What are some tips for people that want to get into this but they don't really know how to start?
So I would say the first thing to do is to just start listening and seeing if you can get a feel for the different sounds of birds that you might hear in your area, and get a feel for what different birds look like without ever having to tie it to names or anything. And once you're sort of comfortable with that, oh, I've heard that sound before and stuff, you can start with some apps. The Cornell Lab of Ornithology has a great one called Merlin. It's free, and you can do a kind of 20 questions way of identifying a bird you see, which often works. But they also have a power to be able to record. You push record, and then it listens to the birds and tells you what you're hearing. Mm. And you have many birds, so it'll come up with a long list. And then when one of them sings, it highlights it in yellow. Mm. So that's a really fantastic independent way to do it. But the Audubon societies are all over, and other birding groups, and I just strongly recommend to join bird walks. We have beginner bird walks here in St. Louis all the time, and I bet you do too.
Yeah, I mean, people that aren't part of this community may not understand that the birding community is vast and passionate. What drives people to get into this hobby? Is it just a fascination with birds and their ancient origins and just the magic of them?
There's just no other animal that ties us to wildness. They're here because they want to be. They can leave at any time. They migrate through. They They're beautiful. They fly. I just think for natural animals, they're just the easiest to see and to follow. And it's you know, it's like many things. Once you get started, the more you get into something, the more exciting it can be.
Yeah, and as you said, they're everywhere. You can birdwatch in the city, in the country, and all places in between.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, bird migration fascinates me, too, because when the geese migrate down here to Florida, a lot of them hang out in our parking lot at WJCT Studios because there's a retention pond right across the way. There's water nearby, and they like to hang out in our parking lot. So we have these very interesting neighbors every year for part of the year. And when I check them out as I'm coming to work in the morning, I often think about how far they go. How far they migrate. Yeah. And it's just fascinating what the way they live, their habits, their instincts.
Yeah. Yeah. These are probably Canada geese, sort of brown and white. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they eat grass. So we've really made life easy for them. Their numbers are exploding.
Which can be a problem of its own kind. But, you know, yes. I really do think that your book is a great gift for the holidays, because people in the last few years have been getting back to basics, slowing down, connecting with their kitchens again, with nature again. How much do you see this birding movement as part of that? Is how it's our culture is changing somewhat post-pandemic?
Yes, I mean, birding at home, and I limited mine to a 20-mile radius from around my house, and I just discovered all kinds of little parks that were right there that I didn't know about. And, you know, I would go there, pull out my little portable chair, and just watch the birds. And it's just, yes, I think the pandemic has obviously had some terrible costs, but I think it's allowed us to get to know ourselves a little better.
Well, I recommend this book for the bird lover in your life. It's a great gift. It's Slow Birding, The Art and Science of Enjoying the Birds in Your Own Backyard. Author Joan E. Strassman, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, the city of Jax is still reeling from a recent upsurge in anti-Semitic hate speech. But here's the response. The Jewish Federation and Foundation of Northeast Florida is making a bold move. They recently announced a new fund. It's called the Together Strong Community Fund, set up with a $1 million donation to address anti-Semitism and bring this community together. David Miller, the executive chairman of Brightway Insurance, is the donor getting this fund going, and he joins us now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
It's so good to see you, and kudos to you for starting the Together Strong Community Fund, giving the Jewish Federation $1 million donation. And tell us a little bit about what motivated you to make this move.
It was interesting. I had a conversation with a local reporter, Mike Mendenhall, from the Daily Record, and you know, the angle was from the business community. How do you feel about this, and how does it affect us? And I think it's really interesting. Obviously, it was not ideal. It didn't represent who this community is. But when we look in the past, and we look, you know, as a community, we either deal with these kind of things as a problem, and we try to use, you know, everyone speaks out and says this is horrible, and yes, it is, but what we do need to do, instead of just verbally saying that this is a problem, and yes, it is a problem, we have to recognize this is an opportunity. Those people do not speak for us. And certainly in the HRO debate, the business community was galvanized and very involved in passing the HRO. And I think in a similar way, the business community, the broader community, community leaders, and you know, are going to be involved in this, the future of this conversation.
That's wonderful. Can you tell us how this money will be used?
Well, we're being really deliberate. I've had amazing conversations with Nina Waters, who heads up the Community Foundation, Melanie Patz at United Way, and Miriam Feist at the Jewish Federation. The three are looking and doing scans in their own networks across the country to look at best practices. I've had calls from former ambassadors. I've had a wonderful conversation with Ken Burns, who did the documentary, The United States.
The Ken Burns.
Yeah, the Ken Burns. And it was wonderful. It was really interesting, though. He shared something that I thought was really telling for us and helps. The idea that, you know, all of this comes down to this basic idea that's out there of us versus them or just us. And when you think about that, it's, you know, when someone plants a flag and says that, you know, whether it's the Jews are bad, the blacks are bad, the gays are bad, the whole idea of trying to identify some group as the problem is the wrong thing. It's the wrong way for us to think as a community. Rather, what we should be doing is saying, how can we work together to understand our hopes and dreams, and how do we accomplish them together? And so I think, you know, that idea is really leading the thought. And hopefully what we're going to do is bring a bunch of different people together and show that that doesn't represent who we are. We are a community that's united, and we are an inclusive community, and it's a place of hope.
And you're showing leadership as a corporate leader. You're calling on business leaders, government officials to join you in this effort to educate the public about rejecting hate speech. This kind of anti-Semitic hate speech is extremely alarming to Jewish citizens, but not just Jewish citizens of this country, because history shows where it can lead. And I cannot tell you how many people contacted me after the Florida Georgia weekend, just beside themselves with worry and anxiety when we saw these hateful displays. So you're calling on people to join you in this effort.
Well, you know, the reality is we are all in this together. You know, our country achieved the great things we've accomplished over, you know, the last 200 plus years by working together, by being innovative, by being inclusive. And, you know, can you imagine where we'd be if along the way we kept saying, who's the problem and how do we throw them off the island? And the small group of people that would be left, certainly the United States wouldn't be the country it is today. I think, look, over the last number of years, there's been an epidemic of division. And we need to really take a step back and look at that. We need to understand that the issue is, as a community, is not just about hate towards Jewish people or just hate towards African-American people, but, you know, or any other minority or LGBT. It is an issue that we are all in this together, and there's no way we are going to succeed by tearing each other down. It's just not going to happen. The only way, the only constructive way forward is for us to say, how do we work together? And, you know, building the mechanisms to do that. I've had great call. I had a wonderful call yesterday with both Florida Blue and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mark Lamping, Shad Khan was incredibly supportive. And, you know, it's interesting. He actually took some heat for in halftime issuing a statement that he did on their network saying, look, you should be focusing on football. But I think it's great that our owner can both, you know, walk and chew gum at the same time and never forget that, you know, he represents our city as well.
Yeah, that's right. Now, as I read about this new fund, it will ignite, as you say, a community-wide endeavor to use education, conversation, and interaction to combat the root causes of bias. You will also use it to help the Jewish Community Alliance's upcoming capital campaign and augment short-term local security measures underway in the Jewish community. That's another big factor as well, as I learned from Miriam Feist of the Jewish Federation. And what she said was, no one should have to feel afraid when they go to their place of worship. That shouldn't happen.
Well, it shouldn't happen. It was funny, before our conversation, I was talking to Dan Scanlon, and he even mentioned At his church, they now have two-way radios and mm-hmm. security. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just a Jewish phenomenon. We've had security for, you know, as long as I can remember. But we don't want the kind of world where we need security. But at this point, that's part of the solution. And until we have the, you know, the kind of community and in the world where we don't have to worry about that, that's our challenge. And so it's up to us to stand up and make Jacksonville and show that Jacksonville is the community we know it to be, not the community of someone who comes from out of state to plant a flag here in Jacksonville.
Now, this fund, the Together Strong Community Fund, is the largest charitable gift in the Jewish Federation and Foundation's history, David. So you expect others, though, to follow your lead and donate what they can?
Well, we would love that. I think it's that's one of the pieces. We would love the corporate community and individuals who basically want an opportunity to say, this is what I believe Jacksonville is. And by supporting this effort, that will go a long way in ensuring that this work is not a flash in the pan, but this work is going to go on. Look, hate didn't start during the Florida-Georgia game. I mean, this wasn't the beginning. It won't be done in 2 weeks either.
Yeah.
We're working together on this.
Kate on the line in Jacksonville. Hi, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to point out that the people that did those anti-Semitic shenanigans over the Florida-Georgia game weekend are the very same people who are fighting to keep this Confederate monument up in Jacksonville. And most people don't know this, but they actually have a plot of land up off of Old Kings Road and 295. And you can check the property appraiser's website. It's the Sons of the Confederate Veterans Kirby Smith Camp. They would be happy to take these monuments from us. And I don't understand why the city council is not facilitating this.
Thank you, Kate. We've been getting a lot of calls and questions about that. Our local leadership denouncing anti-Semitism, but not showing political courage to remove vestiges of white supremacy.
Gosh, it's such an important point. And this is what we all have to remember. It is, the question is not what's the group who we need to focus on. The question is, how do we all work together? It's not about whether we stand up against anti-Semitism or we stand up against racism or bias of any kind. Mm-hmm. It should be that, you know, I need to care just as much about the issues and oppression that my brothers and sisters who are African-American have felt. And their battle is my battle. And we're going to be working very hard with different communities in this effort to kind of say, how do we instead of, you know, allow ourselves to be separated and marginalized, how do we work together to make sure that this idea of dividing and conquering is not going to represent who we are?
David Miller, thanks for joining us this morning and for doing such good in this community. Thanks so much. It's good
Thank
to see
you, Melissa.
And up next, we have a look at some other stuff that's good on our weekly Wednesday menu. So don't go away.
Family Support Services asks you to be an angel to a child in foster care this holiday season by sponsoring a Christmas wish list. Duval and Nassau counties have 1,200 kids in their system of care. More at beanangeljacks.org. Congaree & Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpenn.com.
I'm Robin Young. The Supreme Court will hear a case that may change the way adoptions of Native American children are handled. Under the Indian Child Welfare Act, when a Native American child is available for adoption, priority must be given to tribal members, but a white foster family is fighting that. Next time, Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, Steven Spielberg. His new film, The Fabelmans, is semi-autobiographical and is based on Spielberg's childhood and teenage years, when he fell in love with movies and began making them. It's also about his family and his parents' divorce. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
America is making up its mind. Norms have been broken and early turnout records smashed. But what will our new political map look like? What might it tell us about the direction of the country? And was it the result you wanted? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, they're called Jack's Podcasters United, and they're having a meetup for people who want to learn how to start their own podcast. For more, I spoke with founder Badr Milligan. Hey, Badr, good to be with you. So tell us about Jack's Podcasters United.
Yeah. Hey, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me on. Jack's Podcasters United is a podcasting group based out of Jacksonville, Florida. Started in 2018 by me and my partner, Blythe Brumleaf. We meet every quarter around town. Every event takes place in a different part of town. And we bring out a lot of local podcasters and audio creators to discuss the topics in the industry, to collaborate, to network within among each other. The primary goal of the Jack's Podcasters United group is to promote collaboration over competition through these free events where we bring tools and resources, people that can speak to the industry and, you know, try to better everyone.
Sure. It's obviously an exploding genre, and there are a number of podcasts around town that are catching on, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's some. We've been fortunate enough, like I said, we've been doing it for the last 4 years, and it's just been kind of really impressive to see a lot of local podcasts based out of Jack's, you know, hit certain goals and achieve certain milestones and, you know, get sponsorship deals and et cetera. So, yeah, it's been the podcast scene in Jacksonville has been really impressive to watch lately.
So for people who want to learn more, you're having a free meetup November 10th and bringing in some national experts. So tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So November 10th, it's a free meetup like all of our events are always free. We cater and definitely recommend whether you are a novice or someone aspiring to be a podcaster or you're a pro that's been doing it for a couple of years. You know, we encourage all levels of podcasters to come out. This one's going to be hosted by our good friends and partners at Buzzsprout, who, if you're not familiar with, they are not only one of the largest podcast hosting companies in the world, but they're based out of here in Jacksonville, Florida, which is, you know, awesome to have a partner in them to host these type of meetups. But we're also partnering with the good folks at PodFest Expo, which is another awesome resource for podcasters in Florida. The event, like I said, will take place Thursday, November 10th at Buzzsprout, free to all. We'll have some speakers. The founder of PodFest Expo will also have Tom Rossi from Buzzsprout, as well as a local podcaster, Sarah Lee Kane, who is a fantastic podcast producer. She'll be talking about how to monetize your podcast and, you know, the steps to take place there. Tom and Chris from PodFest Expo will be talking about podcast trends, the industry, and how to get the most out of your first, you know, podcast conference.
Okay, so this is coming up on the 10th, kicking off at 6:30. How can people find the event?
Yeah, so we've got an official Jack's Podcasters United website, jackspodcastersunite.com. We've got an event tab that shows not only all of our events, but it also has a place for upcoming events. That'll link them to the Eventbrite page. All we ask is that people RSVP and just register for the event, just so we can have a head count. So, through the website or just directly through Eventbrite by searching Jack's Podcasters Unite.
Check it out, folks. Botter Milligan giving us the preview. Sounds like a lot of fun. Thanks so much for being with us.
It will be. Thank you so much, Melissa. I really appreciate it.
Here's some more good news for your Wednesday. The Jazz at Lincoln Center On the Road Tour is in town through the 11th doing master classes and concerts. As a special on Veterans Day, they are hosting a free master class and concert at the Jacksonville Arts and Music School from 2 to 5 p.m. So check that out. More free stuff. Vistar Credit Union has launched its Good is Everywhere celebration to highlight their support for their members and the community. Now, this has three main components: free admission days, employee volunteer work, and donations to partners. They're doing free days at everywhere from the Arboretum to Mocha Jack's, the zoo, the Kummer Museum, the Museum of Science and History, and more. So check that out. Okay, listen up, folks. We've got two great giveaways right now, beginning with Tour de Farm. Tour de Farm returns to the First Coast this Sunday. Join Slow Food First Coast for a memorable tour of small farms in Palm Valley. Farm partners will offer you food, plant, and craft options for sale. And guess what? Here's our giveaway. It's a virtual car pass to enjoy Tour de Farm this Sunday. This is a $35 value, and it's good for one car with either four adults or a family, so you can tour the farms. Email us now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org with the subject line tour, and we will pick one winner at random. And we've got another giveaway, the St. John's Blend, a collaboration between Bold Bean Coffee Roasters and the River Keeper. 15% of the proceeds go to support River Keeper activities. We have one bag and a free mug to give away to celebrate the St. John's Blend at Bold Bean. Want some free coffee? Okay, same email address. Email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and just put coffee in the subject line. Always have fun giveaways and positive news to end our Wednesday show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks to our team here, David Luck and Heather Schatz, Brendan Rivers, Brady, and Michelle Corum. We will be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow and do it all again. And we'll have updates on Nicole as well. Stay safe and dry out there and make it a good day. Talk to you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.